So,
what's trending?
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
I was at daily mass a couple weeks ago, and I walk up to communion, and this woman's staring at me, and after mass, she comes rushing over to me and said, "When you were walking up for communion, I thought you were holding a dog. I was so happy you were holding a baby." Well, lo and behold, San Diego and the dog momness is just unreal, that people think that someone's holding a dog before they're holding a baby here in Southern California. I guess it's a good thing we're headed to the Midwest. My husband Gabriel's joining me today on Trending, and we had a friend who came over for dinner the other night, and they were telling us they were at the Cheesecake Factory for Valentine's Day. And as they were sitting there, this couple had four kids, and they said the waiters and the waitresses like didn't know how to respond to this family with four children. And the waiter at one point comes down, like bends down real low, smirks real big, and looks at all the kids and says, "I can't believe it. It's like they're puppies. They're so cute." And my jaw just about dropped. My friend said they could not believe what was just said. And it's interesting, my husband Gabriel's here with me, to see how people kind of just assume that you're a dog parent before you're a parent, and they compare kids to puppies. I just don't understand
it. Well, now millennials are buying houses for their dogs instead of their children.
That's true.
That's the world we are in today.
That's true, because they want property for their dogs to rumble around. They want the grass.
Crazy.
Cage-free, man. Cage-free. But we don't put kids in cages, right? I mean, I'm not a fan of this crate training. Like, no judgment, but I grew up in the mountains. The dog is supposed to roam free. I think you joke that I was an animal puritanist, because if you know, my version of a pet is a rock. I really don't want a dog. I like animals, but I think they should be in their environments.
I agree.
Okay, so we are new parents, rookie parents, and a lot has happened. I know many of you have questions for us. If you'd like to go ahead and ask us a question, you can ask that on Instagram. I've thrown a question box up on my Instagram story. You can find me by heading over to relevantradio.com/trending, where you can get all the links to my social media, download the podcast, listen on your Relevant Radio app, or wherever you love to listen. So, three surprising things I would love to hear, that, and I've not heard these yet from you, about being a new parent. What are they?
Okay. Number one, a lot of diaper changes. A lot.
You didn't expect that?
Did not expect that. And the baby cries more for, or not just for food. She cries for various random things that we don't know. And it's, that part stresses me out.
Is that like, number two?
Yeah, that's number two. Because it's like, she's well fed and she's comfortable. She's cozy. Why is she crying? And it's like, here, just take her. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, it's like, okay, I don't know. Here, you. There are moments where you're like, she just needs mommy. She just needs mommy. Like, just take her now. I don't know what to do with her.
Yep.
But are you starting to get a feel for what her cries sometimes want?
Yeah, she has different cries, which I think is pretty cool. I know when she's hungry. I know when she's tired now. And I just think that's really interesting.
And she's a very social and alert baby.
She is very, very alert.
Right, she's almost 2 months. 2 months tomorrow. This is crazy. Okay, third one.
Third one is, you already mentioned how alert she is. So obviously this is being our first kid. I've never been around an infant this long before in my life. And every time we talk or we make a noise, her eyes move, or she's just so laser focused. I don't know if that's a normal thing for an infant, but, I'm slowly training myself on how to speak, because she's going to be a sponge. And if I say a bad word, that's going to be like the prime word she's going to say. And so I'm now training myself on how to just say things correctly.
Be aware
of what I'm going to, what I'm about to say. Because her eyes, I could just see her eyes.
Piggy, what did you say?
Yeah.
She's very alert. And we've actually been warned. People from like week one have said, "Whoa, you better be careful. She's very alert. She can see, I think, a little further. I mean, every parent wants to say that their child's so special, but she has a level of alertness that's been pretty unique for such a newborn and now 2-month-old. Okay, here are the things that have surprised me the most. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Timory. My husband Gabriel's joining me. If you have a question for us, you can go ahead and ask that question on Instagram. Just head over to relevantradio.com/trending. So the three things that have surprised me the most about being a parent. Number one, just the lack of like sleep. I knew it was going to be a thing, but like in the middle of the night, like you're wide awake with this kid, even though your body's like, I'm melting into the ground right now.
Yeah.
But the good news is I don't want to jinx this, but I think we're on day 6 of her sleeping 8.5 hours or more through the night. It has been glorious.
It's awesome.
Well, glorious if we get to bed right about the same time.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, number two for me would be how fast the day goes by. I mean, before we know it, I'm like, oh, it's already 4 o'clock. It's showtime. Or it's 8 o'clock at night and we want to go to bed. And next thing you know, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. Right. I don't know what happened.
Yeah. It's funny. We put her to bed and it's like, okay, she's got a 2-hour nap. We can get so much done in those 2 hours. And then when she's awake again, it's like our entire schedule just is on pause.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Yes. It is. It's incredible. I think the other thing that's been most surprising for me of being a new parent, this is more so like me, like pregnancy postpartum related, but I thought that I had, you know, a handful of cravings when I was pregnant. I think the cravings are more intense when you're nursing, to be really frank. Have my cravings been worse since I've been nursing?
I think so, yeah. You're craving a lot more pizza.
I think I was craving pizza during the pregnancy as well, but that might have just been COVID.
Yeah.
Comfort food. Okay, so, I mean, it has been so much fun being a new parent, and I can't believe just how quick this has gone by as the days have passed. And I want to dive into kind of another, changing gears a little bit here, of what it's been like to be new parents and to kind of have those fears. I mean, you're a girl dad in 2021. And I remember before we even started dating, we were talking about kind of what it would be like to have families. And you were discerning the priesthood and I was discerning the religious life. I had very much so made this decision that I'm going to become a nun. I want to go get my master's degree, get my PhD, and then be a highly educated religious sister. That was where my brain was. So it was a little ways out. Maybe that was me, you know, kind of just pushing things along, not making a decision. You guys actually made the joke and would call me behind my back.
Sister Clementine.
And I didn't want people to know that I was discerning. So you guys cut off the sister. And you and a couple of our other friends would just walk around calling me Clementine and make me so mad.
It was so funny. Yeah.
This was college before we were dating.
Yeah.
And so you were talking about the priesthood. In fact, God has a really big sense of humor because the religious order that I've been close to, you were close to separately, the Community of St. John, and you were discerning with the Community of St. John. You even wanted to go and you didn't end up joining because the novice director didn't reach back out to you. And so you went to college instead.
Right.
And it was just a total godsend. We knew all the same people, but not together. Mm-hmm. But I bring this up because one of the things that you had said was you were concerned about having kids in the world that we live in.
Yeah.
And so before we dive into these top fears of being a girl dad, where's your mindset now? We've dated, gotten married, we have a kid now.
Yeah.
Are you as afraid today, would you say, of having a kid in today's world as you were back then before we started dating?
No, not anymore because I have a sense of direction now, but I am still very cautious, overly cautious, I think. And I think it's because of this intense, volatile political environment where if you're going to side with one political party, not only do you have to side with their politics, but you have to adhere to their religion. You have to adhere to their ideologies on everything. And I think that's really scary because there's a lot of diabolical things out there. And my goal as a father is how do I make sure that my daughter is on the straight path towards Christ when you have Democrats and Republicans pushing very strange agendas And that's it being infiltrated in our media. And I hate bringing up Democrats, Republicans, but like that's America's religion now.
Yeah, we live in a very polarized world, and just to see what we've been through. And I mean, I think that we were a little preserved in a little bit of a bubble because, I mean, we had the baby, what, December 20th. Things were kind of crazy post-voting and then kind of the turmoil of not knowing what the results were going to be. Yeah. And so here we were with a newborn while the country is rioting, burning. I mean, and we kind of had a little bit of a safe zone because we were so focused on our baby and our day was upside down. We weren't following the news
right. The
way we normally would. And so to kind of like come out of the newborn like haze and look at what was happening, on one end, nothing changed for us.
Right.
On the other end, everything changed. We came out with a new president and the world in a deeper state of turmoil than it even had been before.
Yeah. Yep.
So I think that that's very valid, but I think that the point there is while the world can change around us, our environment doesn't have to be that chaos and that animosity that the world offers. And I think that that was a big lesson I think both you and I learned.
Yeah, I think that's a big deal because when you're with your family and you're in your home, that's the one place that nobody can touch. You know, you're in those walls and you pray together, you eat together, you live together with your family. And that's really where things matter. And that's what really gives me hope is that I think that you and I have a really good sense of direction and really good understanding of our roles and responsibilities as father and wife, or sorry, father and mother for our child. And I think that's a really big deal because a lot of people, you know, they have multiple kids and they're still trying to figure out what it means mm-hmm. to be a dad. Mm-hmm. And I'm just so blessed that, you know, with the education that we had in the past and kind of our ongoing conversations of how we want to raise our child, I think you and I have a really good plan moving forward.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Timmy. That's my husband, Gabriel, joining me here during the show. We're talking about being new parents. Now, I want to talk about those top three fears for you, Gabriel, of being a girl dad. Because you were like really rooting for those boys, like every dad, I think.
Yeah.
And boom, we had that first girl. And I mean, you knew deep down inside that we were having a girl. In fact, before we were pregnant, when we were pregnant, we didn't know you had a dream that we were pregnant with a baby girl.
Yeah.
And so you knew first. As soon as you said that, I'm like, maybe we are.
yep.
So what's your number one fear of being a girl dad?
So at first I was going to say my fear is like just guys.
Boys,
you know, that was my fear. And just how physically aggressive our culture is today. But then I thought to myself, well, no, that's easy. It's, you know, I'm going to teach my daughter jujitsu and martial arts and she'll be able to kick butt. And that's not really a fear anymore because now I have a plan. But so I would say number one would be I want my daughter to be self-reliant but without losing her sense of femininity.
So what's the fear?
So people think so the fear is feminism. People think that self-reliance equates to feminism. And no, like absolutely not. It's good to embrace gentleness and to teach and nurture your children. It's a virtuous act to live out the heart of the family. You know, that's the mother. The father can't do that. And it's so anti-human to have your daughter walk up to you and be like, "Hey, Dad, I'm a feminist now. I don't need no man." It's no, actually, you do. It's just the worst thing to hear.
So you're scared of your daughter becoming a feminist?
Yes, I am. That's the worst thing. I don't know what's worse than that.
There's been a tug and pull in our household even before we were dating because he hated that I would call myself a feminist back when we were dating. You're not a feminist. Stop calling yourself that.
It's like
that.
A cuss word.
But there are a lot of men who think this way because they're so tired of what feminism has become radicalized. It's pro-abortion. It's pro-contraception.
Yeah.
It's you and I have no differences. I don't need you. And ultimately, it is emasculating toward men as well as totally degrading toward women.
Yeah.
And so that fear, I think, is legitimate because even kind of having gone to a small Catholic university of John Paul the Great Catholic University, we saw people who were on the same page with us, came up, grew up in great homes, and they leave school after, you know, kind of acting in a very normal, Catholic, prayerful environment. And then, boom, they're like radical feminists. You go, where did this come from?
Yeah, absolutely. And I can guarantee you right now, all men out there are sick and tired of it, because every man can say, yes, there's a million and a half things that women can do that men cannot. But a feminist can't say that, vice versa. And it's that's not how the world works. We know that the foundation of civilization is the family unit, the father, the mother, the child. A child needs the nurturingness of the mother, and it needs the leadership of the father. If a mother says, we don't need the leadership, I can do it myself, that has serious intellectual, psychological repercussions on the child. And we can see that play out today. I know that I just opened up a can of worms. But
no, and I want to bring up briefly, though, this is really important, because there's a book I read by Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, and she's has a PhD in economics. It's called Love in Economics. And basically what she argues, her main point in the book, is that the family unit is good, and that we need mother, father to care for the baby, essentially.
Correct.
And she basically points out the dynamic that the mother cares for the child and the father cares for the mother and the child. Because if the mother's caring for the child, who's caring for the mother? Who's
Correct.
Providing for her?
Correct.
And so she breaks it down very simply. So if you think, you know what, you guys are like so old fashioned, I don't like what you're saying. Well, actually, from an economic perspective, from a historical perspective, every culture has lived in this way. And so she really breaks it down, and she does incorporate elements of faith, but a lot of incredible studies. So if you disagree with me, or maybe want to make this a little bit more robust of an argument, check out that book, Love in Economics, by Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, because I think it really provides a deeper understanding, even from that economic perspective.
Right.
On the issue.
Yeah.
So two more, what are your other two major fears of being a girl dad?
Yeah. So number two would be like loss of her spiritual life or her relationship with Christ. You know, I want to train her and to teach her to embrace her, that personal relationship with her guardian angel, with her patron saint, with the Holy Family. And when we all grow up, we all have that deep questioning and we start having that self-doubt. That's natural. But I want to make sure that she is able to wrestle through that correctly without losing that sense of faith.
It's good to ask questions. But I feel like people, when they leave, they don't necessarily ask questions. They just abandon their faith. And so
right.
What you're saying, I think, is an important lesson for me to hear, especially when we're younger and we're closer to that phase of kind of starting to own our faith, that when that time comes, that we always foster, ask questions. If you have doubts about the Eucharist, if you know that you're vocalizing what is confusing, because I think it's important to understand that, you know, we believe in faith and reason in our faith. And there are elements of having faith and understanding that things such as the Eucharist and the incarnation of our Lord Jesus Christ are a great mystery.
Yep.
But there's also a lot that we can answer and help to work toward, even if it is fostering that faith in the midst of the questions surrounding the mysteries of our faith.
Absolutely.
Okay, number three.
Okay, number three.
Fear of being a girl dad.
I don't want her to be afraid of bugs or like the outside. I want her to embrace just nature and just, you know, we don't need TVs. If we're going to watch a movie, it'll be an event, but I don't want her watching TV every day, all day.
Yeah.
Video games?
No video games.
No video games. I want her to get scratched up and bruised outside. I want her to come back home with covered in mud. Like when I was a kid, it's awesome to see that, because kids don't do that anymore.
Yeah. I grew up quite the tomboy. Although I grew up dancing and loving my dresses and everything, I also grew up really embracing the outdoors, digging holes, playing in the mud. So you're listening to Trending with Timmy. That's my husband, Gabriel, here. We're going to come back in just a little bit, talking about what it was like during that postpartum recovery, him taking care of me, taking care of a new baby. And we're also taking your questions surrounding Lenten hacks as well. So go ahead, ask your question on Instagram. You can head over to relevantradio.com/trending. To connect on social media, and be sure to share this podcast by sharing right there. New podcasts are available every night. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmery on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back to Trending. My husband Gabriel's with me. We're new parents, rookie parents. Our baby is 2 months old tomorrow. I can't believe it. It's been a total haze. Honestly, I think all of January, once I got kind of out of January, I realized, wow, there are text messages 3 weeks old that I have not even opened. I didn't realize these 3 weeks had gone by. I thought that was like 2 days ago that I saw this come through. I mean, just it's been a total haze, but it has been an absolute joy. So I actually want to talk a little bit about that postpartum recovery, especially what it was like for you, because you had some time off. You had about 3 weeks off that you spent taking care of us. You were there, coached me through our entire labor. If you didn't hear, I had a 66-hour labor. It was long. It was intense. We had an all-natural birth, and a lot could be said about that. We used the Bradley method for breathing and coaching, so it's where you have a husband coach childbirth to really try to have the tools for a natural childbirth, and I thought it was a great method. I really liked it. I know you took a lot of ownership and leadership, and I could not have made it through that process of 66 hours without you.
That was a very stressful time, because I think all husbands or fathers can say during the labor, there's really nothing. We just feel useless, and just all you can do is just suffer through it. And I could just help you as you breathe. I could provide comfort, like, I don't know, snacks or a pillow, blanket. But at the end of the day, we just have to watch you suffer through it.
Yeah.
It's rough. It's a mind game. Yeah.
And you did a lot more than just providing snacks and emotional comfort. I mean, with the Bradley method and some of the exercises we learned, like, you were able to help ease some of the pain of the contractions. And I had horrible pain in my back. I had back labor all through, like, my bum area. And really oddly, I had, like, a lot of pain in my IT band. So I couldn't stand once a contraction hit. And they were just coming for those 66 hours. I mean, that wasn't like the pre-labor Braxton Hicks. I mean, that was constant for a few days, no sleep. And I mean, I remember at one point I would be like, help, every time there was a contraction, because you would do things to help ease the pain. And you were like tired from, like, you were working a lot of the time.
Yeah. You know what's really cool is in the Bradley method, our instructor told us that when the woman says, she can't do this anymore, she's having serious self-doubt, that's when the baby's about to come. But you never doubted yourself. And I thought that was so interesting. I thought a little bragging moment for you.
Maybe stubbornness, pure determination. Yeah. I just think that was awesome. So you're listening to Trending with Timmy. That's my husband, Gabriel, here. During postpartum recovery, what was it like for you coming home to a new baby?
Coming home to a new baby. It was awesome. So this is like one of my favorite memories so far. And that is, we just came home. Bags and everything were still on the floor or whatever. I lay on the couch with our daughter and, you know, we're just snuggling on the couch for like 2 hours, which is awesome. And then I hear you say, hey, Gabe, can you check her diaper? And I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot. And I open up the diaper and I was like, oh, I forgot about the diaper and just the reality sunk in. Like, I have to change diapers now.
Because I'm remembering now, you had said you really wanted to wait. You got out of diapers while we were in the hospital for those few days. And you just said, I really want to wait till we get home. So you had time to kind of warm up to it. So I guess as soon as we got home, I'm like, you're up, man.
Yeah, that was a rough one, too.
I'll never forget the first time you were like holding her and could tell she was going to the bathroom. There's actually a photo we have of like, I'm watching him react and you're hearing her go and he's looking at me and his jaw dropped, like to have another human going to the bathroom in your hands. You were shocked.
Yeah.
Oh, those first 2 hours when you took the nap with the baby were great because I don't think I'd showered in like 4 or 5 days. I mean, I was like a hardcore grimy and I just needed to be home. I needed to get clean and I needed to be able to transition and just, you know, become accustomed to being home with a baby.
Right.
And not be dirty, I guess.
Yeah.
And by the way, I forgot to mention, we were talking about like the most surprising things about being new parents. One of the big ones was not showering.
Yeah.
Like the days going by.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Cause you forget. I mean, it's like, oh, you have to tend to the baby and then one thing leads to another and then it's like nighttime and then you wake up the next day and you're like, oh wait, I didn't shower last night.
What was it like for you taking care of a new baby and a new mom?
You know, it's still not that stressful. I thought it was going to be a lot worse, but honestly, my mind is always focused on food. So if I can have food prepared for you, and then I can just clean up after myself in the kitchen, living space, whatever, I think I'm good to go. As long as your stomach is full, then I feel like I've done my job.
You did a great job those first 3 weeks when, I mean, we were totally dependent. You were taking care of every little thing that we needed. And I remember at one point, sometimes it would be like one thing after another. Can you hand me this? Can you hand me that? Like we were just, her and I were down for the count and we were totally dependent on you. And I remember at one point you said, I'm having a feeling of what it's like to be like a mom and a housewife. I've started having dreams about meal prepping.
Yeah. I had a bad dream that I forgot to meal prep and I woke up in a cold sweat. Yeah. It was funny. Like I knew exactly where everything was. Like, Abe, I need a burp rag. Easy. And I like grabbed it. Like it was funny.
What's the hardest thing been with like taking care of the baby?
The hardest?
Yeah.
I think it's the crying. It still stresses me out a little bit.
Stresses you out or do you feel bad?
I think it's both. Yeah. I hate when she hates the car seat. Oh my gosh. That's like her torture, you know, and she's totally comfortable. We have it set up right. Like it's totally fine. Just the moment she knows she's in the car seat and she hates it.
I feel like she senses when you're around and the car seat is present because she gives you a lot of grief.
Yeah. It's like, we just need to get to point B as quick as we can and get her out of there.
You know, I think some of the postpartum stuff for me, kind of what was it like taking care of a new baby? Again, like how fast the time went by.
Yeah.
And also that she does not know herself apart from me.
Right.
And so her comfort, her peace is you. And, you know, it's so cute though, looking into her face and just wide-eyed, staring right at you. I mean, literally boring into your soul. And that's all she wants.
Yeah.
Is just to make that eye contact. And she loves eye contact. If she is awake, she wants my attention or yours if you're holding her. I mean, even if you pick up your phone for a second and look at it, I mean, she'll like yelp, hey, practically. Yeah. She makes a sound that sounds just like, hey, that she wants you to look at her.
Yeah. Yeah. And she makes that sound when we're specifically not giving her attention. And it's so interesting. And I mean, who knows? Do all 2-month kids do this? I don't know. But I've never seen such an aware child before. It's super interesting.
So what were the emotions like? Was I super emotional after the birth? And how were those first 6 weeks or so?
Yeah. I think you were actually pretty good. I'm impressed. I think you were really good. I think there was this sense of, from both of us, we had this, okay, baby comes first. You know, we're sleeping in the middle of the night and we hear from the bassinet, like crackling and the baby making noises. And we both like just stand up like, oh my gosh, she's moving. Like, is she awake? You know, like the first parent. I feel like that's like the first parent thing. Like we're both overly cautious. But when in terms of like of emotion, I think you're pretty good.
No, yeah. You mentioned the bassinet at night. You were actually way better. I was so tired. I didn't even hear her moving at night in the bassinet. And you would like be up, awake. You would change her diaper. And then you'd wake me up to give her to me because I was so tired.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
From the labor still. And I had gone, I think, between the 3 days of labor and then the couple days before. I hadn't slept in like close to a week other than a couple like brief naps here and there. And so it was definitely, you had a very keen sense of awareness with her that I was just so tired. I couldn't have done it without you. So it was a lot of fun. That's my husband, Gabriel, here on Trending With Me. We've been talking about being new parents, postpartum. We're going to come back talking about Lenten hacks and some questions that you have sent us. We'll also talk about the encyclical by Pope Pius XI on Christian marriage called Cassi Canubi. We'll be right back here on Trending With My Husband, Gabriel.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timmery on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
More on marriage to come here with my husband Gabriel joining me for this special episode of Trending. But we've had a bunch of questions come in for us on social media about marriage and Lenten hacks and so forth. So let's unpack some of these with some rapid fire questions. First, Instagram, what do you recommend married couples do to strengthen their bond with God?
Simple. I mean, just pray together.
Pray together.
Yeah.
Favorite things? Rosary at night.
Rosary at night. I do enjoy listening to homilies with you.
Yes, that's actually a lot of fun to listen to the homilies and kind of pause, discuss.
Mm-hmm.
We love homilies from Sensus Fidelium.
Yeah.
Also, we try always to pray night prayer together. Rosary in the evening and night prayer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Those have been kind of our check-in points with prayer together, and I think that that's been extremely beneficial. Second, this listener on Instagram wants to hear from your perspective, how to encourage your husband to stop watching porn.
Whoa.
Got real serious.
I got real serious. I don't know. Destroy his computer. poor battery acid on his computer. Wow. How do you encourage your husband to stop watching porn?
Something that's coming to mind while you kind of like recover from the intensity of that question. Welcome to what I do. You're getting a taste of what I do right
now. Seriously, this is way above my pay grade.
Imagine when you're face to face with someone and you get this question.
Yeah. Wow.
Demands a lot of prayer. The first thing that comes to mind just right now is I remember the story of Terry Crews, and Terry Crews's wife, Rebecca Crews, ended up kicking him out of the house. She kicked him out of the house, and her doing that allowed him kind of just to hit that wall that he needed to in order to change directions.
Yeah.
And it helped save their marriage because she held that fast line of, no, it stops here. And so for him, it was a threefold approach. It was therapy. It was filtration softwares such as Covenant Eyes, for example. CovenantEyes.com is a great resource. But then in addition to that professional therapy, also that spiritual direction as well. All of those matter in incorporating your faith into that healing process.
Yeah.
So now that you've had a moment to kind of think through this question just a little bit, what would you say that in terms of just being positive and not nagging a spouse, what would be helpful for a wife to do to encourage her husband to grow?
Definitely not nag. That's just going to make things worse. But I love what Terry Crews' wife did. I didn't know that she threw him out of the house. I say I'm all for that 100%. Or like,
destroy the computer temptation, I think, was a really legitimate response. What can you do to destroy the temptation?
Think of it this way. Like, think of this scenario. Husband watches porn, wife catches him, wife destroys the computer. The next week he buys a new computer, he does it again. What does the wife do? Destroy the next computer. I say just keep destroying technology.
An axe? I mean, what works here?
Battery acid. I think destroying the computer is awesome. I think kicking him out of the house is awesome. I say sending him to boot camp. I don't know, maybe waking him up with like a cold bucket of ice thrown on his face. I mean, I don't know. I just think doing just constant penance, aggressive and like unnecessary penance, like don't even cook for him. Like just sleep in a different room. Or...
Okay, not to make lightly though of this issue, but I think that your extreme response to how to address a pornography issue, I'm really fascinated to hear your perspective, because I think that destroying the temptation, destroying the source, I mean, we do learn when there are consequences for what we do. And Terry Crews learned that from The Consequence. When you said destroy the computer, destroy the second computer, you know, get rid of your cell phone, go to a flip phone. I mean, if you are truly struggling with a pornography addiction, and you are a spouse, doing what you can to help your spouse along without losing love. So I don't know that I'd agree with the not cooking for him. I think it's important to still love your spouse, but maybe that is something very legitimate.
No, I disagree. I think it's totally fine to just not cook for him. I think it's totally fine to not do his laundry or just to not nurture him at all. I think it's totally fine to just ignore him. I think that men need very abrasive penances. They need a physical detachment of their sin. You don't have to eat for 3 days. That's fine. If you're hungry, nobody cares.
You know, that's interesting that you brought that up, because Sister Teen Alfieri, who's a specialist in addictive disorders, specifically sexual addiction disorders, on Wednesday, incredible episode on Ash Wednesday. In fact, we'll make sure that we post that on social media and post a link in the podcast notes today. You can find that at relevantradio.com/trending. But when I asked her, like, what can you do this Lent, or even if it wasn't Lent, to overcome an addictive behavior, and it doesn't have to be the extreme of porn, it could be something else. Her first response was a 3-day bread and water fast. And if you want to hear a little bit more of that explanation, go and listen to the podcast. But that awareness of your hunger pains can help you to do penance for what you've done, and also to remind yourself of needing to detach from that specific sin.
Yeah. Well, also, fasting is a proactive approach to destroy just the diabolic in your life. I mean, that is a very, that's a physical activity, and the devil hates it. Demons hate it. I mean, that's fasting is one of the most, the martyrs have done it. The saints have done it. There's a reason why it's so effective. Mm-hmm. When you are denying yourself flesh, you are denying the same thing that is leading you to hell. And that's a really, really big deal.
And you, when you say when you're denying yourself flesh, you're denying yourself meat.
Meat. Comfort. 100% comfort. You're denying yourself food. You're denying yourself of porn, of all other things that make you comfortable. It's not okay to be comfortable. It's not okay to live comfortably 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If you're cold, turn off the heater in your house right now. If you're in the wintertime, like, turn off your heater. Take a cold shower in the wintertime. Like, it's not a big deal. If you're suffering through it, then suffer more. Especially if you're going through a porn addiction, you need St. Paul says, do violence to yourself. Go do that.
We have to nuance that. But when he says do violence to yourself, I think that it's hard for us in the 21st century to read things such as St. Alphonsus Liguori, to read St. Paul when he says do violence to yourself. You go, wow, that's really harsh. But he's calling us to a life of asceticism. And what did Jesus Christ live? He lived a life of asceticism. 40 days fasting in the desert. I mean, our fast during Lent is nothing in comparison. Yeah. The suffering that we go through in comparison to his scourging, in the comparison to his crucifixion, cannot even touch the level of suffering he experienced, plus the awareness of all of the sins that every single one of us would commit. He carried all of that physically and emotionally and mentally in the scourging, in the garden, and in the crucifixion.
Yeah. And then one last thing I want to add is that we're Catholic, and that doesn't mean to live a comfortable life. I mean, being Catholic is not relatable by nature. Christ calls us to pick up the cross and carry it. He's telling us to carry it till Golgotha. And I think I've said this on the show before in the past. I mean, that's our duty as Catholics, is to pick up our cross, carry it, do penance, and to rid our souls of sin. And that's not a comfortable thing. That's not a thing that you can just like sing about and be happy about. It's, mm-hmm. it's war. Mm-hmm. Martyrs have existed. They still exist. There's a reason why we have martyrs. There's a reason why, St. Peter said, I want to be crucified upside down.
Yeah.
There's a reason why St. Lawrence said when he was being fried alive, he said, hey, I'm done on this side. Flip me over. I mean, we have martyrs who go to the absolute extreme limit because they know their soul is in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
We need that.
And asceticism, if done with the right perspective, draws us closer to Christ. And all throughout the Old Testament, even when God required and demanded particular bloody sacrifices, not of people, I think it's important to say that, but of animals, and certain sacrifices of first fruits and the works of our hands, he would say over and over again that he desired a humble, contrite heart, not right. just a sacrifice. And so our humble, contrite heart is what is to be united to the sacrifices that we make, not just making a sacrifice for the sake of a sacrifice, because then there is no merit yeah. in terms of growth to that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Every sacrifice needs to be united to Christ on the cross and really challenging us to the transformation that we so deeply desire.
Yeah.
Don't just be someone, you know, a Pharisee who's walking around showing off what we've done. Don't go to the front of the church and march in and, you know, show that I'm here, I'm in front, I'm, you know, bowing down before God, I'm in my sackcloth and ashes.
Yeah.
Make the sacrifices with a humble, contrite heart.
Yeah. I love that Father Tim said yesterday. He said, we live more luxurious than any Caesar or Pharaoh.
That's Father Tim Grumbach, who was here hanging out with us. And that's true. We live more luxuriously than the royalty before us. Yet we are so, we're so spoiled. We're so comfortable.
Yeah.
I say this quote over and over again. I hope that you listen to this quote and take it to heart because it's something I live by. Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI once said, the world offers you comfort. You were not made for comfort. You were made for greatness.
Mm-hmm.
And those words are such an inspiration for me, because there are moments when you want the comfort of food, you want the comfort of your couch, you want the comfort of just binge watching Netflix. In reality, that comfort doesn't bring about ultimate joy.
Yeah.
It just brings about momentary satisfaction,
yeah.
or we could say pleasure, and pleasure is not what we're meant to live our life on.
No. Yeah.
Great questions. I mean, very thought-provocative question. I just want to touch back on the whole porn question again. Like, how do you encourage your husband to stop watching porn? I think it's also important from our perspectives as women that very often with a pornography addiction, not that the wife has made her husband look at porn, but a wife can be the cause, in the sense of a husband searching out for porn. And that never justifies what he does.
Mm.
And this may or not be your case in your marriage, but I think it's important to recognize that we do have some soul searching to do at times of how has perhaps my behavior made my husband feel unloved, where he may be searching out emotional comfort in a different way. And again, it doesn't justify it, but that can be part of a pornography addiction, because we know that people, when they struggle with this specific addiction, aren't just looking for these images, but they're often even looking for types of porn because they're looking for types of maybe emotional intimacy, and that type of porn points to kind of some of the underlying impact of what's happening behind the scenes emotionally for that person.
Yeah.
You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray. That's my husband, Gabriel, here. And one of the questions that came up on Twitter is it better to pray more or give up all of your favorite foods or both? What's your initial reaction?
So clearly the answer is both, but I think that there's a strategic approach to this, because if you give up too much too fast, too quickly,
kind of implode, give up almost.
Yeah, if you quit your current life cold turkey, I think there's more negative repercussions to that. Your Lent will only last a few days. And then it's over.
Mm-hmm.
So what I say is Lent should be a life-changing experience. So when you do when you do give up something small initially, and then the next week, give up something in addition.
And, that's a good way. Yeah, those are some great ideas.
Yeah, and then incorporate an extra 5 to 10 minutes of prayer each day throughout that Lenten time. And then after Lent, keep that up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, continue that penance of giving up foods,
mm-hmm.
but also maintain that schedule of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time you reach the next Lent, the next year, you're doing even more.
Mm-hmm.
So that 3 years later, you're living the life of a saint.
Even throughout your year. You know, Lent isn't the only time we can grow. And we have to remember, three things, components should be involved in our Lenten sacrifices, what we're doing and giving up for Lent: prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. And so we need to make sure when we do our live our Lent that we are touching all three of those. We're called to fast, and not just from meat on Fridays and during Wednesdays of Lent, but to fast from those things that are causing a disordered attachment and preventing us from attaching properly to God.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to detach from those things that are preventing us from attaching properly to God. That's part of fasting. And then that can also lead into prayer, that when we detach from these things, we should have more time to pray, or we should have more emotional space to pray, mental space to pray. Or even when we have those hunger pains, when we have those desires for the things that we've given up, that we are making that longing a prayer in and of itself. Like, oh, yeah. Lord, this is a reminder that I'm supposed to unite myself to you, unite my sacrifice to you, that this is a reminder for me to pray more. And then almsgiving, to give as much as we are able to.
Mm.
And that can look differently for everyone. It might be volunteering. It might be, you know, giving monetary support. It might, you know, be helping in a soup kitchen. There's so many ways to live this out, but how will that be best for you to challenge you to grow and to be charitable, to not just give what is the other person's due? When someone's hungry, we have a responsibility to give them food, but to be charitable, to go beyond what is their right, instead to go beyond and give what is more than what they deserve in terms of justice.
Right. Absolutely.
You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray. That's my husband Gabriel here joining me on the show. Someone asked a question about, what about when you're nursing a baby? How do you fast during Lent? Oh gosh, this has been whole new waters for me both last year and this year. I used to, prior to being pregnant, fast and abstain from foods both on Wednesdays and Fridays. Once I got pregnant, that kind of totally changed my capacity to fast. I'm trying to find the balance now. I live by a ketogenic diet in doing intermittent fasting. And I'm not intermittent fasting while nursing, but I try to make sure, you know, if I can, if I'm eating right, I can cut off eating food at a certain point in the day. I don't need to continue to eat through the night. But if I'm eating the wrong foods that just make me feel good, well, then I do need to munch perpetually. So it's about eating and getting the right nutrition. And for me, that's lots of healthy fats, lots of good healthy vegetables, you know, living the keto diet for me personally. But it's supposed to be an alkaline diet for women, so lots of spices and vegetables, and not overdoing it on the dairy. So that's been what's helpful for me. I was able to do no meat this year on Ash Wednesday, and I had like one large meal and like a smaller meal. And so I kind of set the goal for myself. Like, if I'm going to fast, for example, on Ash Wednesday, I didn't eat until after Mass and at 2 o'clock that day.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was my goal, to make it that far. And I made it that far, and then I had my good meal, and I went, okay, Lord, my goal is to have ideally nothing, but if I have to have something small this evening, that's okay, because I can't be so weak that I can't take care of my child. And so it's important, I think, for me to pay attention to how I'm feeling, but also to set goals for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was really helpful. And we'll see how the Triduum goes. When Fridays during Lent, I'm not going to be eating meat, but I think it's important to make sure that there's good nutrition. And trying to, you know, just be aware, do as much as you can. I think everyone's body is a little different. So those are my kind of tips so far for how things are going with nursing and really trying to make sure that I'm still getting the right nutrition as we move along. So if you have more questions, let me know. But I'll share more as Lent goes by with what I found out or the kind of the tips and tricks for nursing and fasting during Lent. But again, set goals. You know, it's okay if you're a little hungry leading up to 10 or 11 o'clock, but then get yourself the nutrition later on. I think that's a great sacrifice and place to start. That's been my husband, Gabriel, here on Trending. If you want to share this podcast, head over to relevantradio.com/trending.